And welcome into the Wednesday edition of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, how are we doing? Joe Rex Road, what's going on?
Not much. Just, unfortunately, no Preds game. I was looking forward to the Vols basketball game, and that was ugly.
Yeah.
Very ugly.
Yeah, it was very ugly. What happened to the Vols in that game? A tough one. 75-49, they fall to the Florida Gators last night, and it was rough right from the jump.
And you saw the Florida official tweet, right?
Oh yeah, it was amazing.
Let the listeners know.
I did not.
No, it's the so we talked at the end of the show yesterday about the McDonald's bags that allegedly they're handing out money in Jeremy Pruitt's program, and how we've gotten into this situation here where Florida comes out and just steamrolls Tennessee in basketball yesterday. And then they tweet, we're loving it with the shade thrown over them with the final score attached to it. It was nice.
Well done, Florida.
Oh, man. It's never going to end.
No.
Whether that story is true or not.
It doesn't matter if it's true or not. This is going to be a thing forever. And I'm okay with it.
Well, so I tweeted something about that, basically 10 years from now, they're still going to be making McDonald's jokes, about Tennessee. I mean, I saw the run through the power golden arches and, all this stuff that, Ronald McDonald's the next coach.
Yeah.
Dave Foster brought up a good point. He said, counterpoint, no one is talking about butt chugging. So, I mean,
it's good.
You always got to look at the bright side, man.
Yeah, I mean, there's
could always be worse.
And we found with Tennessee football, maybe eventually it will be. We get back to a point where it is worse.
That's true. That's true, too.
Oh, pretty amazing. So Florida hammers Tennessee 75-49. They got some problems offensively and obviously defensively as well last night, but they got to start finding a way to put the ball in the basket with a little bit more consistency.
Yeah, I mean, look, Jaden Springer not playing. They really need him. I think he's their – I think Keon Johnson might have a higher ceiling, but Jaden Springer is the more polished player right now and does everything well. So he was out with an ankle. And then Vescovi, whenever basketball players get the quote-unquote hip injury, you worry a little bit about that because that's kind of a, can be like a sports hernia slash core. Vescovi last night looked like me on the court at this advanced age of my life, just kind of shuffling around, man. And he gutted it out, give him credit, but they're trying to stretch him out and everything. And I know that in the Vanderbilt game, it was the same thing. That's a concern. And it was just one of those games where, Rick Barnes went off on them after the game, and especially Fulkerson and Pons, those guys. It was a bad effort. It was just it's also, unless you're like Gonzaga and you play in a league where no one can beat you, everyone's going to have a couple,
Yeah.
That you flush, and that's what this was. You flush it.
Let me ask you this. Could Alabama have the best football and basketball team in the SEC? They looked pretty much unstoppable from three-point range last night.
I tell you what, they are rolling. I mean, they had like 90 – with 10 minutes to go, and then they called it off and they score 105. I mean, they could have gone for 120 plus in that game, and they hit, I think 20s. They are just absolutely tearing everybody apart right now. Yeah.
A great tweet by you last night. I've got to give you props as well. Talking about Alabama, the threes they were hitting. And I think you said they were a couple more threes away from LSU launching an internal investigation into Will Wade. That was well done, Joe Rexroad.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. I even got, Mitch Light, my buddy and editor at The Athletic, immediately texted me and said, good job on that one. I said, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that. Every once in a while, every once in a while, Tennessee's going to have a stinker in basketball. I'll have a good tweet.
We saw both instances last night. So rare form on a Tuesday night here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, as you mentioned, no Nashville Predators game last night. It was called off due to COVID issues with the Carolina Hurricanes. And yesterday, late last night, four players were added to the NHL COVID-19 protocol list from the Hurricanes. Jordan Martinook, Jacob Slavin, Teuvo Teravainen, and Warren Fogle added to that list last night for the Hurricanes. So Doesn't necessarily mean that all four have COVID-19, but they've at least been in prolonged contact or something like that in some form or fashion. And Jordan Staal from the Hurricanes was already on the COVID-19 list, did not play against the Predators the other night. So no game last night for the Predators, and now you're just hoping, if you're a Predators fan, if those guys were infected, that they did not cross any of that over to the Predators when they played against each other on Monday night.
Right. And so far, you know, that stuff hasn't been a big issue. So right. hopefully that'll be the case. And obviously, we don't need sports necessarily to know it, but sports helps instruct you on all this stuff. We know that there's an incubation period and, you know, things like that. I mean, it can be problematic, but hopefully the Preds will be in the clear and will be all good to go this weekend.
Hopefully so, and the game between Carolina was postponed, and the decision of when that game is going to be made up has not been announced yet. Obviously, the NHL will keep tabs on that, and probably not going to be the last time this happens with the Predators or really every team around the league. This is going to be a very fluid situation
the NHL. When you look at the Pred schedule, the end of the season, they have a back-to-back with Carolina. That's the only other time this season that Carolina is slated to come to Smashville.
Yeah.
So I would have to think that the NHL here in January isn't going to be extending the regular season schedule this quickly into the season, kind of like what the NFL did without, funneling games to a Week 18. They waited as long as possible to do that, and they ended up not having to do that. So I would have to think that somewhere in the schedule that there's a spot where both the Preds and the Canes can make something work, where that game can be played here at Bridgestone Arena.
Exactly.
Does it matter that much? Does it matter that much this year if it's played here?
David Poile said,
you'd prefer that.
Yeah. So David Poile said yesterday with Darren Donick and Chase that it will 100% be played in Nashville. So I would expect it to be rescheduled for here. And if you're looking for a sweet spot in the schedule, probably early March could be an opportunity. The first 3 days of March, the Preds don't play, but they still are on a homestand. So the potential for maybe like a March 2nd for Carolina to come here as they, I believe, hit the road. That's the start of a road trip or the end of a road trip, one or the other, for the Carolina Hurricanes, where they could feasibly squeeze that in.
Now, of course, you also might get to 10, 12 games postponed, and then it's, you know, at some point it may just be a totally different picture, right? I mean, it may be to the point where it's like, okay, you know, there's just going to be teams with different totals, and you're going to go by winning percentage. I mean, hopefully that's not the case, but that's a possibility.
Well, and who knows with the Carolina schedule, if they have to miss some games coming up, how that's going to impact their schedule for the rest of the year. So they moved around a ton of games.
Right.
Just to reschedule Dallas's first four games.
Right.
So we'll see.
And the Preds will go to Dallas here later this week. That'll be the first action of the season for the Dallas Stars. So already off to an interesting start in the NHL. We expected this. It's not going to be any different than it was for any other league. I mean, the NBA is going through the ringer right now as well. So it's a challenge just to get out there on the ice and on the floor, and it will continue to be that way for the foreseeable future, and we'll see how the NHL is able to navigate that. Joe Rexrow, did you see A.J. Brown on Instagram Live yesterday?
You know, I didn't watch it because, you know, everyone did play-by-play. I mean, I'm aware of it. I'm aware of what he said and everything. And hats off to him for doing a post-surgery video for everybody.
Apparently, A.J. Brown was in surgery yesterday and winds up doing an Instagram Live video post-op where he announces that just had surgery on both of his knees. They told him that he was done for the season in week two, and he was able to play through it and obviously have a Pro Bowl caliber season for the Titans. And Teron Davenport coming out and saying, he had the left knee that he tweaked during training camp, and then also injured the right knee in the game against the Broncos. So both knees affected for A.J. Brown. Had an ankle injury, as we know, later in the season as well. So the fact that A.J. Brown was still like walking around at the end of the season, much less playing football, is impressive to me. Just hats off to that guy for getting out there on the field with everything he was dealing with.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, I'm curious about the season-ending thing there because, I mean, if these are scopes, which I assume they are, I mean, usually a scope, you know, it's 2 to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
That's typical. Now, that's still, you know, significant. Like, you don't want to miss that time. And if you're running well, then, you know, I get not wanting to do it. But I don't understand why that would have been season-ending, though, if he would have had that. Or he would have missed, like, say, a month, you know?
I don't know.
It doesn't totally add up to me.
It doesn't add up to me either. And, you know, A.J. Brown is saying this yesterday when I think there are some pretty obvious after effects from surgery going on in that video. Was not a fan of the Coca-Cola and the temperature that it was while he was drinking. So some very entertaining stuff from A.J. Brown on the Instagram Live. But, yeah, I kind of raised my eyebrows at that, too. I was like, man, if it was that bad in week two, how are you still able to be an absolute monster on the field, which he was all season long?
Yeah, you got the two knees and you got, the ankle that obviously was a problem. I mean, that was bothering him visibly at the end. So, and still heck of a player. And so he said Vrabel's going to be mad about this. Is that right?
Probably. And then Derrick Henry hopped on there as well, like didn't start talking but was just commenting in the comments. It was quite entertaining. Henry was on there, Jeffrey Simmons was on there, a lot of people enjoying watching AJ Brown on his Instagram Live yesterday reporting the news to all of us that he just had surgery. And the crazy part is, I mean, you have, you know, knee issues bothering you all year, the ankle that we talked about, and you still finish with 70 catches, over 1,000 yards and 11 touchdowns. And think about what he would have done if he was healthy.
Yeah. No doubt. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, he missed a decent chunk, you know, of camp for sure with whichever one of them was first. So that's an awfully impressive season given the circumstances. We need more athletes to do that, you know, just when you have surgery and, you know, you're right after the surgery.
Just top on
all
immediately.
Right still.
Yeah.
Hop on. So that was IG yeah, Live?
IG Live, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Rexro, do you have an IG? You gonna hop on the IG Live now?
I don't. I think my kids, I think they might all have it. But no way, man. No way.
Just Twitter guy.
Twitter is more than enough. Hey, it's better than Chad Henne with his only LinkedIn.
That's true. I respect that from Chad Henne. Many things that I've come to respect about Chad Henne over the course of this past week that I never thought I would. So congratulations to Chad Henne on the week that he's had in my own life. Got a lot to get to on the show today. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us at 7:30. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Volunteers with him both on the football field and the basketball court. Matt Duchesne, Predator Centerman, will join us at 9 o'clock as he does every Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock. So looking forward to that conversation with him. And then Adam Vingan at 9:30 from The Athletic. We'll dive into the latest of the Nashville Predators with him as well. So a lot to get to today here on Robbie and Rex Road. And when we come back, we will go back into the world of Tennessee football. What a strange and crazy world it's been. What is this going to look like for the next Tennessee coach, regardless of who that is? And do they even have a chance of success? We'll discuss that when we come back. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I can't tell you how many conversations we've had about the depths of this program. I remember in February sharing a platform with you on the river talking about Tennessee football and the optimism that seemed to permeate the air. And now this shattering event, and it just seems like this program can't ever get it right.
That was Paul Feinbaum from ESPN and the SEC Network talking about the state of this Tennessee football program and the mess now left behind by Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer and company. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, talked about it a lot yesterday, what's been laid out there, what went on with Jeremy Pruitt, what also allegedly has gone on with Jeremy Pruitt, maybe some McDonald's bags as well along the way. But regardless, Tennessee is going to have a new athletics director position to field and a new head coaching position to fill as well. And based on the history of this program, the recent history in the last 12 to 13 years, I mean, you just go through it. The athletic directors that they've run through there, the head coaches that have run in and out of there, from Lane Kiffin all the way up to Jeremy Pruitt. It's been one big giant mess in that football program, and it's got a lot of people wondering. As you look at this job, as you look at the state of this program and where they sit in the SEC right now, is the next coach, regardless of who it is, just automatically set up for failure based on the way that this program has been dragged through the mud for the past decade plus? Joe Rexroad, if I ask you that question, what would your response be? How difficult of a challenge is this going to be for the next coach, regardless of who it is?
Well, I don't know that I believe that the next coach is set up for failure. I think the next coach is set up for some tough work ahead. But I still, through all this, still think this job could be awfully good for someone. I mean, it's got to be someone good. And things have got to work out. And there are some things around the job, and I'm talking in particular, you know, other programs that are making it tougher. You know, one thing, we think about SEC programs, right? We think about, man, Alabama, they're just rolling, and look at LSU. Man, Georgia's even taken it to another level with Kirby Smart. But, I mean, if you want to talk about recruiting areas and traditional recruiting areas for the Vols, you know, obviously they've done really well in the Carolinas yep. over the years. And Clemson is just, you know, Clemson's rise is a big problem for Tennessee. I mean, just because they're in the ACC, you're just talking about, I mean, there's only so much premium talent in the country. And so now you have them. And, of course, they go everywhere, but still, like, they've got some of those areas on lockdown now that, you know, when you go back to Majors and Fulmer were very rich areas bringing really good players in here. And, you know, so, I mean, it's hard, but failure, I don't necessarily buy that. I mean, I want to know who the AD is, and that's just a big deal. I mean, you've got to be able to have an AD and a coach who are allowed to do their jobs. I do think that if you want to flip this around, I think the next coach is probably set up to have more patience than some of these predecessors have had. I just think that's a natural thing. One thing that I guess a good thing if you're a coach looking at this job that goes along with all these misses and failures is that the standard gets lowered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's absolutely the case. And, you know, I think in a typical situation, like as it stands right now, if you're a Tennessee coach, regardless of who that next guy is coming in, the roster, it's not great, but it's not in a horrible position right now. And with some of the reports coming out yesterday, it could get to the place pretty quickly that it ends up in a bad position. I mean, there were reports yesterday saying that maybe Henry Toto and Eric Gray and Darnell Wright are thinking about leaving and heading into the transfer portal. Obviously, when you have a head coach leave the program and a head coach that, to David Ubbin's point from The Athletic, who joined us yesterday here on the show, I do think was pretty popular in that room. Like, I think it's clear that his players did like playing yeah. for him. Now, you know, with some of the things that have allegedly gone on, maybe there's a reason they really liked playing for him. But I do think that was something that's to Jeremy Pruitt's credit, that he seemed to connect pretty well with his players. And if all of a sudden you have this mass exodus here in a transfer portal situation over the next few days and weeks, who knows what this roster is going to look like for an incoming Tennessee head coach. So that part of it's going to be really interesting to monitor. But I do think, you know, they have some intriguing pieces. Caden Salter's made it pretty clear on social media that he intends on staying and sticking around, and we'll see what the future holds with Harrison Bailey as well. But the next few days and weeks and what happens with this roster from a transfer portal standpoint, going to be very interesting to monitor, because, I mean, that plays a big part into what kind of a job this is that you're taking over and how long the quote-unquote rebuild will need to take place.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and obviously there's some guys. So a guy like Eric Gray, you know, that's a guy who he'd have one more year, you know. So I mean, your rebuild is going to go way beyond, you know, when he's gone. But, right. Boy, it'd be nice to have him. And that's a guy, the first guy I thought of in terms of someone who's going to be gone. Let's remember that Eric Gray was held out of that last game,
yep,
and was involved in this in some way. You know, still a lot of details to come in the investigation. I mean, I was one of, I think, three people who tried to ask about him after that game, which will end up being the final words to Jeremy Pruitt. Jeremy Pruitt didn't answer any of those questions about Eric Gray and called this a basic compliance matter. But that's a guy who, because of that, you would think, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he can, you know, go somewhere, play that last year, and then I think go to the NFL. I think he's probably good enough, which also really makes it hurt that Ty Chandler didn't come back, you know, for next year. I mean, you lose both those guys. That would be a killer to lose Wright. Obviously a killer to lose Toto, and it shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, Pruitt flew out there to try to talk him back onto the team. I mean, what are you thinking about this if you're Toto? If you're Henry Toto, you're looking at Tennessee, you know, and your coach flies out, has this whole, you know, conversation with you. You're like, all right, I'm coming back. And then a couple days later, oh, he's fired. Like, do you want to come back and play for Tennessee?
No.
I wouldn't, you know. I wouldn't blame him at all, especially when you're from the other side of the country. So, yeah, I mean, next year's team could be rough. Now, if you can keep a lot of the – I would think that a lot of these guys are waiting to see who the hire is. Do I fit into the system? Do I like this guy? What am I hearing about this guy? I mean, I would think there'd be quite a bit of wait and see also on this roster.
I would think so, too. And it's interesting the point you bring up about maybe the next hire getting some more patience. I mean, obviously this is a different situation heading into this hire. You still don't know exactly what's going to come from all this with the NCAA and the investigation that's still going on. You know, what kind of damage is going to be done, and maybe in terms of potential postseason bans and scholarship reductions. You know, all that is still yet to be seen up until this point. I do wonder, though, like, I know how the Tennessee fan base works. The patience, if you're not winning by year three, it's not going to be there anymore with a lot of them. So I think at some point, if you're a Tennessee fan, you got to be realist with yourself and get over that part of it, because this is going to be a very tough uphill climb that, quite frankly, at the moment, I don't know how attractive it is to coaches out there that are looking at this job, that have established Power 5 success, because – you know, Randy Boyd has made that pretty clear in an interview yesterday with Blake Topmeyer that, you know, the time of hiring coaches that haven't done it before apparently is coming to an end at Tennessee, and that's going to be their goal, is to hire a proven winner at the head coaching level. I just don't know how many of those guys look at Tennessee right now and say, you know what, that's the place I want to go. That's where I want to be with the dumpster fire that it has been for the last 12 years.
Right now, and first of all, I think that they are right that should be the standard. Now, you know, Billy Napier, Jamie Chadwell, those guys are proven winners, not at the Power 5 level,
right.
But you know, as long as you're not specifying Power 5, then I think you can still make that happen. I mean, I would think both those guys would take that job. Hey, maybe I'm wrong. I'd be shocked if Chadwell wouldn't take it, but. You know, to your point on patience there, that'll be interesting. I mean, you're right. Some, of course, if it doesn't look good, if there's no progress. So much of this is recruiting. That's the funny thing. You know, maybe Dooley was trying to do this job a different way. But the thing is, it wasn't just the on-the-field stuff. It was the fact that they just weren't recruiting at the level you were used to seeing from Tennessee. That made it a lot easier to move on from him. Butch's recruiting – obviously he brought in a lot of good players, turned out to be not as good as the ranking suggested, but his recruiting created a lot more, I think, optimism and maybe time for him. Right.
Yeah.
But then again, that didn't matter for Pruitt, because when you, when you stink to a certain level, as they did this year on the field, and when you botch the quarterback situation so badly as he did, well, and there's a lot of different ways to get yourself on the outs with this fan base. But I think the next guy, I could be wrong here. I could be naive here, but I actually think there's going to be more patience.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. John Michael texts in and says, Will Healy to UT. We've gotten a whole lot of texts about Will Healy the last couple of days.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I think Will Healy, I think Will Healy is worth an interview. You know, of course, he got interviewed by Vanderbilt. There were some people pushing him hard to Vanderbilt. I think Vanderbilt, I would say, you know, they weren't totally blown away by what he has done. And I think that's the thing for him to over. I think what he did at Austin Peay, I look at it like it was incredible. But there's still going to be people at the Power Five level saying, yeah, but it's the FCS level. You know, if he was setting the world on fire at Charlotte, okay, maybe let's talk. You know, they were 2-4 this year. I mean, it's so hard in a year like this. So half their season was wiped out. I mean, but I think Will Healy is going to be a Power Five head coach someday. And if you grab him now, I think you might be real happy about it 5 years down the road. I also recognize that it's a certain level of risk at this point.
When we come back, let's revisit the infamous Shiano Sunday. We all know what happened that day, how crazy it was. Tennessee fans took over their program and did not allow Greg Schiano's hiring basically to go through at that point. Do Tennessee fans feel any differently about that now, which led to the hiring of Jeremy Pruitt? Did they make a mistake by not bringing Greg Schiano on board? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
It was a sign of astonishing weakness that a Twitter storm caused them to not hire Greg Schiano. It was weakness on the part of the athletic director and the athletic department. They should never have been influenced by that. No disrespect for the passionate fans of Tennessee, but that shouldn't have happened.
That
made me crazy.
That was Trevor Maddich on with Stillman and Company, revisiting Greg Schiano and the fiasco that was the Tennessee coaching search back in the fall of 2017. Welcome in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. So, Joe, let's revisit Schiano Sunday and the craziness of that day, because obviously the events that transpired that day eventually led to the hiring of both Jeremy Pruitt and Philip Fulmer in their respective positions. Up until the other day, it was announced that Pruitt had been fired and Fulmer was retiring. And it's interesting because you go back to that weekend, and if memory serves me correctly, I think on that Saturday, Tennessee was pretty heavily interested in Dan Mullen. And Dan Mullen was the name that was being floated around. And Dan Mullen was kind of waiting to see what was happening with Florida. And I believe Florida was interested in Scott Frost. Scott Frost eventually says no. And then, of course, Florida moves on to Dan Mullen and hires him. So that Sunday, John Curry's hopping on a plane and he's going to Ohio, and his intentions are to hire Greg Schiano, who at the time I believe was the defensive coordinator for Ohio State. He comes back, and I think, you know, Schiano's coming back with him, and maybe to announce the news that night that he's been hired as the next head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. And we all know what happened after that. Fans went in an uproar on Twitter. They started gathering together on the University of Tennessee campus and like protesting outside the stadium. You had coffee shops in Knoxville tweeting about how if Schiano was the hire, they wouldn't let him be entered inside the building. I mean, it was just crazy going on Schiano Sunday. And eventually that hire fell through. John Curry's days as the athletic director at Tennessee were over. And on comes Philip Fulmer and eventually Jeremy Pruitt. Joe, as you look back on that, how differently do you think Tennessee fans would feel about that now if Tennessee went out and hired Greg Schiano? And do you think Tennessee possibly made a mistake by not bringing Schiano into the fold?
So you're first of all, on your recollection, the only thing that I'm not sure about, I thought that it was Chip Kelly picking UCLA. I definitely, you're right that Frost was part of that, but I thought that the domino was Chip Kelly picking UCLA.
That
over
may have
Florida,
been it. I know that Frost was in there, but I can't remember if Frost was the one right before or if it was Chip Kelly.
But regardless, I mean, Florida almost botched that, man.
Yeah,
they almost botched it, and I said at the time like that would be a huge mistake, and Dan Mullen would have picked Tennessee. And you think about how different the world would look right now, just right there. Forget like Saban and Drew Brees. I mean, just that right there changes things so much. So as you say these things, I'm having my flashbacks, as I always do, to sitting in the press box at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy, because the Titans that day led by Terry Rubisky's crafty play calling.
Oh, yes.
Scored a big win over the Colts on the road. And in the midst of covering that game, I am scrambling because Dan Wolkin broke the story that Greg Schiano was a hire. So I'm looking at my column I wrote that day. I just Googled it up, published in the 4:32 in the afternoon. And the column says, Greg Schiano? Hard to get excited about him as the future of Vols football. So I'm going to read the lead to you. John Curry didn't just lose the press conference. He got blown out, and it hasn't even been scheduled yet. Now, this is before really all that stuff went nuts, okay?
Right.
Now, I mean, now, the immediate reaction was negative, but this was before all, like, the Rock and the rally and all those things that went crazy. But I will say that my initial reaction was, oh, don't do that. That's a terrible move.
Yeah.
And look, here's another thing too. It's look, people went way too far on the Jerry Sandusky thing.
Yes.
Okay. But the bottom line is, and again, so I put this in the column. I mean, you're talking about Knoxville, a place that just had all these Title IX issues, right? You just had all this stuff. You settled a lawsuit, $2.48 million 17 months earlier. And I wrote this here. Former Penn State assistant Mike McQuarrie testified that Schiano came into Tom Bradley's office, quote, white as a goat, said he just saw Sandusky doing something to a boy in a shower. I mean, this was in a court document. Now, that turns into, obviously, you know, Schiano has been vetted, Ohio State, all that stuff. And that turns into, again, people going way too far with it, like he was in on some cover-up, et cetera, et cetera. But still, that's not, like, it's not nothing. You know, it's not nothing. The bigger thing to me with Schiano was in the NFL, he was a disaster.
Yeah.
A disaster. Like a Tampa Bay player, I'm reading through all this stuff right now, told NFL.com that playing for Schiano was like, quote, like being in Cuba. Okay. I mean, like the whole team hated his guts. You know, the other people in the league too, because apparently they were, you know, I forget exactly, but they had some bounty type stuff too.
Yeah.
And he's a Jersey guy who had no ties to the SEC. I think it was a terrible hire. So I want to start right out with that. And I'm reading this comment. I'm like, yep, I still feel all this stuff. So it bothers me when we now, and look, Dan Wolkin's a friend and Pat Forty's a friend, and, you know, and that's fine. But those guys to me, they overplay this, oh, you wish you had Schiano. I mean, Stillman does too. And I'm like, guys, these two things can be true. It's okay to say, you know, that Jeremy Pruitt was a freaking disaster and a doofus and he's gone, okay? But you don't want to, to me, you don't want to go back and hire Schiano. Schiano's great at Rutgers. Let's see how he does.
Yeah, and you heard Trevor Maddich there to begin the segment on, you know, Tennessee's administration and them listening to the fans. Well, Trevor Maddich also had some comments on Greg Schiano and the actions that Vols fans took that day. Here's what Trevor Maddich had to say.
Schiano went to Rutgers, whose previous bowl was, I think, the Salad Bowl back in the 70s when he got there. Rutgers was the running joke in college football in terms of ineptitude. Schiano opened up a pipeline to Miami. He started to get more of the top New Jersey recruits to stay home. Recruits that would have gone to USC and Alabama and Penn State. Some of those guys stayed home, and then more guys started to trickle in, and Rutgers became a bowl program, and they became respectable. Then he left, and things kind of left. Now he's back, and they're getting back on that trajectory. He is a very good coach. And so I just would suggest that I love the passion of Tennessee fans. I think it's great. I think it's great that they put their opinion out there and their desires out there and what they want. But at the same time, I think it would be dangerous for them to think that they can put together a Twitter force that should influence any of these decisions, because it should not.
So that was Trevor Maddich on with Stillman and Company. And look, I mean, parts of what he's talking about there, I absolutely buy. I mean, Schiano did a great job the first time around at Rutgers. That program was awful, and he got it to a place of respectability. The Rutgers job and the Tennessee job, two very different animals. I mean, recruiting is much different. There's a whole lot that goes into it. And I agree, two things can be true. Yes, Jeremy Pruitt's hire was a disaster, and Philip Fulmer, you know, you look back, there weren't a whole lot of options at the time based on a lot of what happened with Schiano and John Curry and the mess that happened with that search. So, yeah, I mean, you could go back to Fulmer and just, like, throw it in his face that he hired Jeremy Pruitt, and I certainly understand it. But the fact of the matter is, at that point in the search, I mean, your options were not going to be great at that time. So, yes, Jeremy Pruitt was a disaster. That does not mean that Greg Schiano should have been the hire here. Two things can be true at the same time. I don't know if we're in this exact situation talking about it today, if Greg Schiano is the hire, but it was very difficult for me to envision Greg Schiano having any amount of long-term success at Tennessee.
All right, let me throw this at you guys. I want to hear your opinion on this because I'm not saying that Schiano would have been a much better coach than Jeremy Pruitt, but if they had gone through with Schiano and had, let's say, the same amount of success or lack thereof as Jeremy Pruitt, and Schiano gets canned this past Monday, just like Pruitt did, is this job more attractive to outside head coaches because of the administration not going with the fan base and causing there to be this maybe some baggage in the eyes of outside people of I don't want to even touch that job because of what happened on Schiano Sunday?
Okay, I'll jump on that. First of all, you know, let's remember that on that day. So I know that, like, Clay Travis was one big catalyst here, and then a lot of people on Twitter. But there were also, what, there were, like, state representatives, right?
Oh, yeah. It went all over the place.
So, I mean, look, I understand, and I think at the time it was like, wow. I think really what this was, one, it was an indication of this fan base and the power of the fan base, but also the power of social media. We haven't seen anything quite like this, but I bet you this isn't the last time. My answer to you, Ryan, is no. I don't think that that's a big factor at this point. I think that the bigger factor right now would be, man, so their administration decided to go ahead and cripple the program with violations just to get out of a buyout, huh? Whether that's exactly true or not, that's the bigger concern right now of how coaches view the job, not that the fans, you know, went nuts, in my opinion. By the way, real fast, looking through this column, it was Chip Kelly. I think Frost was earlier there, sort of said, I'm good. I'm going through, like, this list of, like, coaches I threw out at the time. I'm like, how about Jeff Brom? Matt Campbell? Mike Leach? Oh, there could have been Mike Leach. And I know Tennessee fans are like, Tennessee fans are like, well, I don't know if I would have been excited, but media would have been excited.
That's all that matters, right?
And that's what matters. That's good. We get good quotes.
Look, there's no question that what went down on Schiano Sunday, it was a bad look. It was a bad look for the Tennessee fan base. It was a bad look all the way around. And a lot of that, frankly, was because of how far some of the Tennessee fans took it with the Sandusky stuff. And I think that was way too far, way uncalled for. And I did understand the frustration with the hire because I think it would have been a disaster. Do I think that that is an effect, has an effect now on a coaching search and how this job is viewed? Maybe by some, but I don't think it's a big deal. Like, at the end of the day, money talks, history in the program talks, and you got to factor in, I mean, most of these coaches that are in these jobs, they've got huge egos, and they think that they're going to be the guy that comes in and fixes it no matter what's happened in the past. So I don't think that the Schiano stuff is a big factor now. Would it look different if they just went ahead and hired him and it didn't work out and maybe this job is more attractive to some candidates around? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever know the answer to that. But I just think with the ego involved in coaching and the money that's on the table and the opportunity in the SEC at Tennessee, I think that overrides everything else in this discussion.
I mean, I've had a coach tell me, hey, that's what you want. You want that fan base. Now, of course, that's a coach who believes, you know, I would win there, you know, yeah. But that's, you know, I mean, you want a place that can pack a 107,000-seat stadium and you know, and has that kind of support because that means more resources, and that's what coaches want. So, yeah, I think at the time it was like, whoa, what is going on? But you know, you have to try to separate out the extreme people who were doing ridiculous stuff from what I think were totally valid complaints about Schiano. I, you know, like Wolken wrote the other day, you know, that Curry, and this is an interesting point, but Curry was like, you know, Butch Jones is so thin-skinned. And he was right. It didn't take him being long around Butch Jones long to figure that out. He just, everything the media says, he reacts to it. You need someone who, like, is great at blocking that out. And so, great. I mean, okay, I get that. But there's so many things about him that didn't fit. And, again, there were just better. Like Mike Norvell at that time, you know? I mean, he was there. And there were just better choices. And, I can't look back on that and think that it was a mistake ultimately to not go with him.
We'll continue this discussion when we come back. Get your reaction to it as well. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Should Tennessee fans regret not hiring Greg Schiano back in 2017 when he had the opportunity? And where does this job right now rank nationally? All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, I've got a tweet to read for you from Hugh Freeze. You ready for this?
Oh, boy.
Hugh Freeze on Twitter says,
"Am I ever?
You/me are not the mistakes we've made or what labels are put on us by others. We are what God says we are, and anything else is false humility." So, in all capital letters, flip the script and start telling yourself stories worthy of telling. Go hashtag win the day. So inspiring words there from Hugh Freeze. And maybe it's just the cynic in me, but it's interesting that now, of all times to have a tweet like that, the story of you and me are not the mistakes we've made or what labels are put on us by others is the tweet that he's rolling with today. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I found it very funny.
So you feel like this is part of Hugh's campaign for the Vols job?
Yes, very, very slyly on the campaign trail for the Vols job. And, of course, you look through the replies, and Tennessee fans are already all over it. So good job, Tennessee fans. Still all over the Hugh Freeze train.
So people in the class are like, yes, Coach Freeze, yes, come yes, to Knoxville. Yes. That's what you mean by it?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
It would be good words, so Coach. Tennessee if they hired Hugh Freeze after stating Monday, we got to win the right way.
I'm kind of hoping it happens at this point.
I need that press conference.
Oh, it would be amazing.
I'd bathe in that press conference.
Look, I think it has basically zero chance of happening at this point, but man, would it be funny. I just thought I'd pass that tweet along by Hugh Freeze. The timing is always just incredible with that man. So we'll continue to monitor maybe some other tweets that Hugh Freeze comes out with. We're talking about Greg Schiano revisiting Schiano Sunday and getting your reaction. Did Tennessee make a mistake? Should that have been the hire? Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben from Brentwood texts in and says, the initial mistake was bringing in Schiano. He would have been a terrible personality fit. But the biggest mistake was the adults in the room giving in to the Twitter tantrum. When your kids throw a tantrum, you tell them to sit down and eat their broccoli. So some nice parallels there from Ben and Brentwood.
Yeah, and look, that's pretty good. But like, I never looked at that as purely like, oh my God, Twitter's going nuts. Again, like you have people, you know, gathering on campus. You have actually humans doing things away from Twitter too. You have state legislators calling, you know. And frankly, you also, I mean, you got Beverly Davenport at the time, probably listening to some of these things and thinking, why was John Curry so in love with Greg Schiano here? Yeah. You know, I mean, is it possible that like leadership at Tennessee was like, God, that's stupid on their own? I mean, that is possible, right? I know that we want to frame it as like this big revolt that, you know, just totally changed everyone's mind, but do we really know that anyone but John Curry actually liked the idea?
No, I don't think we do. I mean, I think it's easy to look at the situation if you're someone involved in that Tennessee administration and be like, I don't know about this guy. I mean, the Penn State stuff aside, like you said, it's not nothing. It's nowhere near what Tennessee fans at the time made it out to be, and I think a lot of which was Tennessee fans just not liking the hire and them using the Penn State stuff unfairly and to their advantage on that. But there are plenty of other red flags with Greg Schiano as well, like you pointed out in the last segment. So I think that's absolutely possible that some people at Tennessee were like, you know what, John Curry, we're gonna take this back over. Thanks, but no thanks. We'll move on in a different direction. Let's bring in Phil Fulmer.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Look, John Curry. I mean, like we talked yesterday about the, or maybe 2 days ago about the just the weirdness of that whole thing, the weirdest presser ever. You know, bringing in Fulmer and all that stuff. And I know at the time there was a lot of, oh, this was Fulmer stabbing him in the back, and you know, and but I mean, like, it's not disputed that Curry flew out west and like wasn't reachable for like half a day. You know, I mean, like, he did stupid stuff. You know, I think John Curry will probably be fine as AD at Wake Forest. I think he would have been fine as Tennessee's AD. Let's acknowledge that he did some stupid stuff here.
He absolutely did. Let's introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. How would you classify the state of the Tennessee Vols head coaching job? And your options are, it's top 10 to 15 in the nation, it's not far off from elite, an average SEC job, or a total dumpster fire. 187 votes are in so far. 56% are going with total dumpster fire, 34% with an average SEC job, 8% say not far off from elite, and just 2% say still a top 10 to 15 job in the nation. Joe Rexroad, what do you think of the people's response early in the voting process here on the poll question?
Well, I think that, I think anyone saying, you know, because honestly, I'm kind of trying to sort this through in my head too. I mean, I like, a lot of times we'll say like, yeah, top whatever on something, and they're like, okay, count them out then. And you're like, oh yeah, maybe not quite that good. I think those results sound reasonable so far. I think that top 15 right now is probably a little bit, optimistic. Although this also depends. This question is subjective too. You know, it's kind of like, how do you really define it? It's kind of like the question of if a school is a football or basketball school. Like, I always had this argument covering Michigan State because they have been way better in basketball with Tom Izzo for a long time. Now, they had a great run with D'Antonio, but I always said, guy, it doesn't matter. It's a football school because that's what people care most about. So right now, Tennessee is way better in men's basketball than football, right?
Yep.
And they might go to the Final Four this year. I know it's people now are probably like, oh, there's no way after last night, but they're good enough and they're going to be good down the road. It'll never be a basketball school. It's a football school, right?
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing as like, so the Tennessee job is still the value. There's some things that are built in, even though right now, obviously the program or whatever the team is not top, you know, 50, right? So, but it's hard to separate those things when you're struggling too.
When we come back, we'll dive into the Titans. Obviously some holes to fill on the coaching staff now that Arthur Smith is gone to be the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. What's more important for the Titans to hit a home run on with their next hire? Is it offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator? We'll debate that when we come back. But first, football fans, I've got a word from FanDuel, and I've got the perfect way to make the playoffs even more exciting this weekend, and it's called a same-game parlay bet. And they're only available on FanDuel Sportsbook. A same-game parlay lets you combine multiple bets from a single game for an even bigger win during conference championship weekend. You can combine the money line, the over-under, and player props all in one parlay. And best of all, FanDuel is letting you protect your parlay. That's right, you can place a 3-plus same-game parlay and get up to $25 back if you fall one leg short with the same-game parlay insurance. And the playoffs are the perfect time to give it a shot. It's just one of many ways to win on FanDuel. They've got great odds boost and specials. They've got a range of betting options like player props, futures, and whatever bet you're looking for, FanDuel has got it. And if you haven't already, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app, sign up to get started, and use my promo code ROB, that's R-O-B, at sign up. That's promo code ROB at sign up. And if you're a current customer, you're all set. Just go check out the same game parlays only available on FanDuel Sportsbook. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. A refund issued is non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. A max refund of $25. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789.